Blog Talk Radio.
This is from Kilimanjaro, Tanzania. Homo, you got to hit the lot of people here, man. Gonna go everywhere in Africa. Why, see, I'm gonna tell you about Homo.
You wanna hear about what I wanna tell about? Nataka kusikia, nachotaka kuongea. Homo, you got to see, Homo, Homo, you got to see.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. From time to time, we will have a special presentation on a variety of topics. Homeopathy is a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks. Please contact HWC if you would like to help support the show as a sustaining member or have suggestions for future shows. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Please share by tweeting on Twitter, posting on Facebook and MySpace, and all other social networks. You may select the widget and place the player on your blog or website. With gratitude to all our listeners, let's go!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. And in celebration of Indian Independence Day, we're going to have this special interview, which was recorded earlier in June. And we're going to begin the interview with Joe Rosenzweig from New Zealand. I will open the chat if you want to make a comment in there, and we'll see how long the show goes. Whatever you would like, message you would like listeners to hear, we will talk about that subject.
Okay. I don't know.
Why don't I start with asking just a little background history about yourself?
What do you want to know? From birth or just education?
Well, I think people need to know that you have a sense of humor. And
I think so. I'm trying to keep me alive.
And I think at a point in your life history, which would be, well, if you have a story from childhood you think that people ought to know or don't know, and it would be interesting.
No, that they will read in my biography, which I'm writing. That is pretty funny, too. You know, biography of the good Jewish boy, it's always pretty funny. See Woody Allen. But what shall I say? Well, I'm a Brussels sprout and born and bred in Brussels. All my life I wanted to be a doctor and a surgeon, so I did it. One day in Brussels I suddenly suffered of acute thoracic back pain, which did not react to anything, any of the drugs I had at home, and I had quite a few. Started introducing that in my surgical practice. And to my big surprise, it worked. Later on, my son was born, and at that time I was still believing in vaccines and all that stuff. So he was vaccinated, and then he started the usual rigmarole that we know, otitis, antibiotics, diarrhea, and another otitis, another antibiotic, and another diarrhea. So I asked his pediatrician if that is what we could do for him. Anything? He said, no, he said, you outgrow it. That time I was a little bit smarter, so I went to a homeopathic practitioner, gave me a few powders, and that settled everything. So yet again, slap in my ego, and I started studying homeopathy. And from there, every door that presented itself, every window, I went through it, and I tried to learn everything. You know, for example, people brought me plants at home, and they say, what is that? You should know that you're a homeopath. I say, no, I'm a homeopath, not a herbalist. But eventually they kept coming, so I said, well, okay, let's study herbalism. and then nutrition, and then this, and then that, and then that, and then that. And eventually, I keep studying and studying and studying, and I just love it. Which brings me to the practice I have. My practice is not pure homeopathy, as everybody knows, I think. I would call my practice pragmatic. That means that it's always an empty sheet of paper. I don't know anything about the patient, no preconceptions. I don't start saying the day saying, well, today I'm going to use homeopathy, or today I'm going to do osteopathic manipulation, or whatever. I don't know. I follow the patient. I find an answer, listen to the patient. And whatever the patient tells me, I follow him, and I try to find out what he needs and how to apply it. Which means that nowadays there's a lot of nutrition coming in, quite a lot of detoxification that has to come in, re-education of the people, giving them back the power to control their lives. And of course all that is helped with homeopathy. About 95% of my patients end up being treated by homeopathy, but most of them have other things to help them, either symptomatically or with other problems. You know, when I examine a patient, because I observe a physical examination, there's an imbalance here or there, or a joint that is not working properly under my hands, well, I cannot not adjust it. And that's how it goes. That's the beginning.
That's wonderful. You must have a sixth sense or some way to know, as you say, you follow the patient, mm-hmm. what they need, what kind of approach or treatment out of the eclectic. I would call it eclectic. You're calling it practical approach. Is that what you said?
Yes, it's absolutely practical and pragmatic. I listen, but also I ask my questions because I do know what is happening. For example, from my studies, I know that not a single human being should touch gluten, for example, or dairy products. So I spend a long time asking them what they eat and how much and so on, and then re-educating them. Because many people, 100% of people have symptoms that can be linked to gluten, for example. So I don't want to treat the symptoms of the gluten. I want to remove the cause, as Ananan said also, and then treat the patient that is underneath that. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. And I do know we have a colleague here who has published a few articles about the use of triticum repens to help people tolerate gluten. But to me, this doesn't make any sense because it helps them assimilate a poison that eventually is going to kill them. And I don't see any sense into that. So this is a nutritional re-education that, to me, is part of homeopathy. And of course, when you read an analyst, it is part of his practice too. It is coffee and his dietary rules, which I must say disagree with most of them. But anyway, he had a nutritional impact, and to me this is important. You cannot treat a deficiency in vitamin C or in vitamin D in homeopathy. You have first to provide it. Now, if a patient cannot absorb it, then homeopathy can help. But if you don't provide it, how can homeopathy help?
So my question regarding the gluten, because there are so many people today who are hypersensitive to gluten, you're just mm-hmm. saying adjust the diet, but you're saying yes. the ability of mankind to be able to eat products that have gluten, the breaking bread, and isn't that normal?
No, that is something that is not biological. And when you look at that from, we're far from homeopathy, no. But when you look at that from the point of view of paleo medicine, the medicine of the ancient, the people, the mummies, and all that stuff, you realize that people who died before agriculture was created, the Homo sapiens, the Cro-Magnon people, the cavemen, they had plenty of trauma, of course, but almost no degenerative diseases. Whereas as soon as agriculture was invented, degenerative diseases started. At equal ages, you have skeletons that are full of deformities and skeletons that are pure. And if you look, for example, at the mummies of the pharaohs, the richest and most powerful people in the world, who had the best food in the world, they are full of degenerative diseases. So that solves the problem. And then you have the clinical experience. I've been putting people off gluten for at least 15 years. And I must say that those who accept and who go very strictly to a total abstinence of gluten, all of them see their state of health change. Often that doesn't cure the problem for which they come, but at least their level of health is different, and lots of symptoms that were related to gluten disappear and do not have to be taken into account in the repertorization. It simplifies life a lot.
Fascinating.
It actually is.
It is fascinating. You know, we never know. I'm letting you lead, and I'm listening just like you do in your approach to the patient. And so we're saying here that we're not supposed to be eating products like bread or baked goods or anything, and that's just like off of our menu. It's off limits, and yet we have these cravings for that.
We have what?
Many people have cravings for.
Absolutely, you crave the things that you are sensitive to. That's something that has been demonstrated by conventional medicine too. There's lots of allergy clinics for whom that's the starting point. What do you crave? Okay, you're probably sensitive to that. Let's desensitize you. There was a clinic like that in London many years ago, but they unfortunately they closed because they stopped being subventioned, and that was their point of start. And they removed everything from the patient. They put them on the total hypoallergenic diet, which was a deer and lamb, which is very tasty for one day, but when you are 3 months on that diet, it's absolutely horrible.
Which diet? Of lamb?
Lamb and deer.
And then what happens?
And then they stop having all their symptoms, and then they slowly reintroduce every week one different food, one type of food, and see how the patient reacts. And if it's an allergen, they either remove that completely from the diet, or they try to desensitize them. But again, that is not homeopathy.
No, that's an elimination diet.
It's an elimination diet. It's absolutely terrible.
Right. So, I mean, a person, especially a young child, not and even an adult, will feel as if I've often heard them say, how long do I have to do this, and I'm going to feel deprived?
Well, that is not true, because how long? Well, my answers are very blunt, for your lifetime. And deprived, yes, it's difficult for the first 2 weeks. I know, I've been there, I've done that. I'm totally gluten-free and dairy-free here, and sugar-free and all that stuff, and money-free too. Yes, it is difficult the first 2 weeks. You are craving. Sometimes you have a withdrawal syndrome. That is true. And then you lose that craving. And if you try it about 6, 7, 8 months later, you say, oh my God, how did I ever eat that stuff? It's absolutely disgusting. It is not true. It is a kind of a social thing, a civilization thing. It is, of course, very easy to make a sandwich or to pop something, prepare noodles in the microwave. It saves you time, and it's a kind of a rule that in breakfast you have croissant with just creme au lait and things like that, or you have porridge and things like that. You know, I teach my patients to eat soup in the morning or to eat eggs or steak or a kind of a movie made only with nuts and seeds and fruit, and it works perfectly well. If you were able to see them not at all in a situation of malnutrition, on the contrary, and that's the way I live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also education by examples. One person at a time, education by example. And then when those symptoms have disappeared, we can take care of the rest of the real deep stuff, what is called, still called constitution, the Maya roots, and all the rest. Because otherwise, you know, when people come and tell you, you know, I have bloating, I have nausea, I have vomiting all the time, and you try to detect your anxiety, and you go with all the remedies and nothing works, well, first you ask yourself, what is it? And I see that on the discussion we stand part of, you know, you should try this and that remedy and approach it this way and in this constitution and use myelin and use this potency and that potency. No, it's not correct. Just remove the tools first, find out what is hurting the patient, and then you can go to the real treatment. The example I would say is if you come to me for a headache and I give you Arnica or whatever, it's not going to help if you keep banging your head against the wall.
Right. So you're actually saying that the symptoms that remain
mm-hmm.
become so clear, the picture becomes much clearer to you what your remedy
yes.
selection will be, because you've removed all of those the blocks to cure. Or you know, we have read over and over again in Organon of Medicine by Hahnemann his very long list of things that he said not to take in terms of food. And we often laugh at them.
Yeah, me too, because they are not correct. But he didn't have that knowledge, that anthropological knowledge that we have now.
Well, let me ask you about the dairy. I mean, are you saying also no dairy? I mean, even fermented products?
Dairy products, milk is for babies and from the same species, first of all. That's one. Two, we don't have enzymes to digest the proteins of that milk. For example, the casein, which is the protein of the milk, you need the enzyme rennet. We don't have that. Okay? So it undergoes a process of fermentation and putrefaction in our body, and it is then reabsorbed and creates what is called the complex called caseomorphine. That is being demonstrated by conventional scientists. Caseomorphine, the same as glutamorphine and beta-morphine, have activities on the brain. And we do know that when we have autistic children and ADHD children and we remove dairy products from their diet, they do better. We do know that children with allergies and sniffles and eczema and repeated tonsillitis, you remove dairy and they do better. The Chinese knew that. They said milk is a very yin product. You should use it only if you are very young.
So many cultures have cheese products as part of their regular diet.
Cheese products and fermented things like kefir are already partially digested. So they can be used, but everything depends on the quantity.
Okay.
You know, the modern society is based on that, whereas the so-called primitive society are based on fruit and veggies, nuts and seeds, and animal protein, meaning animals that you can hunt, whereas the dairy products are a very little part of your diet. You have to look at their cookbooks. How do you use that? Look at how the Japanese in traditional cooking or the Chinese in traditional cooking use the milk. It's very, very, very restrictive.
I'm thinking of herders, civilizations who herded.
That is something, yes. That has been a natural selection. You're talking about, for example, the Maasai in Kenya. they live on two kinds of food, the milk of their cows and the blood of their cows. But that's the only food they have. And then natural selection has come in, and the people who could not tolerate that died and did not reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take those people and you put them into what I call a healthy diet, they're going to die because they cannot tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is natural selection, and that's fine. That's fine, but those are very selective populations. Right? And that's where individualization of the patient comes back in. And sometimes I have to ask the patient, what is your background? Where are your parents and grandparents coming from? And sometimes that can give a clue. And in doing that, you remove all the obstacles to cure, and then you can find the right way to go directly to the remedy, and it works, as long as you use the proper way of giving the remedy. Which leads us to the Fibonacci series.
Yay. I want to talk about the, you know, here I am all the while you're talking, and I'm listening carefully, but I'm also thinking about the pizza pie. The pizza pie that's covered with tomato sauce, cheese, and a very thin crust. And it's and I'm saying to myself, what? I'm not allowed to have that?
I will not tell anybody.
Well, we're talking to the world here.
Okay, fine. Let the world know that you had your piece of pie today, and that's good.
Well, I'm planning to make it. But okay, so now tell us about the Fibonacci series and how this came about and how you use it.
Oh, the Fibonacci came about because from the beginning of my studies, I always asked, same question like every student asks, what potency do you use? And everybody uses something different. And there's been a few years ago, 10 years ago, Michelle Schein, I think, published a book called What About the Potency? And in that book, she interviewed all the famous and lesser famous homeopaths about how do they use the potency, what potency, Q, LM, C, D, X, whatever. What do you start, how do you continue? And each and every one had a different system. And each and every one claimed that his system was the best and the only one to use, more or less, depending on their personality. And that really irritated me because, in fact, in the olden days, I never knew what potency to use. So I said, okay, this does not make any sense. By the way, this is chapter one of my book, The Potency. This does not make any sense. We have to find something that can be common for everybody. Now, how can something be common to everybody when it is a law of nature? Gravity is a law of nature. It works on everybody. The law of similar is a law of nature. It works for everybody and everything. So what is common in the whole universe? And by chance, I came upon the Fibonacci series, which you can find everywhere, from the microscopical world to the universe and the galaxy. There's not a single place. I think you received my book some time ago. If you look at the picture, you're going to see that the Fibonacci series is everywhere. I said, well, let's do that. And looking at the numbers, I was shocked by the correlation with the old French system that I use, where they use 3, 5, 8, 12, 18, 24, and 30 feet, because they didn't have access to more than 30 feet at a certain stage. And it correlates very much with the 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55 feet, etc. of the Fibonacci series. So I tried to fiddle around, and it did make sense. It would make sense because it can be applied to each and every patient, and you do not miss anything. It's like a radio dial. You start at one extremity, and you go to each and every radio station, and you listen at the news and the information on each and every radio station. Some of them don't say anything, so it's white news. So you go further, and then you don't miss any information. And it has been absolutely fabulous. I have been able to solve problems only with the 3C.
The 3C.
A 3C, an ADHD child got a sulfur 3C within a few minutes. He was totally transformed. And then we went through the whole series in order to, fine-tune the rest. It's absolutely fabulous. The power of the lower potencies are absolutely incredible. And I'm detailing that in the next book I'm writing now, which will be called Third Millennium Homeopathy. And there's a lot more details about that then. But that has totally changed my practice. Because first of all, I don't have to have a headache about what potency to use. I start with 3 or 5, depending on what is available, and I go up to 233, and that's it.
And do you take the remedy and you hand succuss it to the next level? Is that how you do it?
We start, for example, sulfur, okay? You start with a 3C. You see what is happening. If there is no change whatsoever with that first potency within 24-48 hours, you go to the next potency, 5C. Okay? If there is any change whatsoever, you just wait until the change becomes stable. There's no change anymore. And only then do you go to the next potency.
So you're never repeating the same potency?
It depends. If I have to use water potency for sensitive people, yes, I do that. Then I do the LM system. I can even use multiple dilution glasses. For example, I will put the sulfur 3C in one glass and in a second, third, fourth, and fifth dilution glass and start with one drop. And then the same thing. As long as there is a reaction, we don't do anything. There's no more reaction. We repeat a drop. No reaction. We go back one glass, and then one glass, and then one glass, until we are the first dilution glass. No reaction to the drops of the first dilution glass. Then we go to the fifth dilution glass of the next potency, 5C, and so on and so on and so on. So it again, you have the possibility to fine tune it by using the technique of the water potency and the LM potency. But to go very, very, very deep and really clean the whole patient and everything, it's absolutely fabulous.
It sounds great. Let's say you have a difficult case and you started with the 3C and you've been going up maybe 10 levels and you haven't seen a response yet. Do you feel as if you still might get the response or...
Mm-hmm. I stopped at 233 for practical reasons, and if I haven't seen any response on N at any level, the remedy is wrong.
Okay.
It's that simple. The remedy is not correct. I choose the wrong remedy. Mind you, if for some reason your repetitorization led you to choose a remedy, that means there's a partial coverage. So what happens, even if the remedy is wrong, unless it's totally wrong by design, and I've done that with a few volunteers to see what could be the side effect, but unless the remedy is totally wrong, you will have some symptoms that will disappear. And then you have, again, a cleaner, purer case, and the remedy pops you in the face. It makes life a lot simpler. And also because the patient has to prepare and do a kind of a ceremonial to take his medicine. It's not me in the consultation throwing the pill in his mouth. The patient is a lot more involved in his treatment. And I ask them every time they take a dose to email me and tell me what has happened. So they are followed very closely. And that works very well.
Mm-hmm. Explain to me again then how the patient is involved. You give each of the remedies to the patient at each level of the way?
I have a system with the homeopathic pharmacy in Wellington. They send the remedy to the patient. And it's one dose of each potency, the very old system in powder. So, the shoulder and that little folded piece of paper. So they have to open the envelope and unfold the piece of paper on top of a plate and then dissolve the powder in a teaspoon, and then put the teaspoon in their nose when the nose is clean. So it's a very small little ceremonial, but it's not an automatic thing like you pop your beta blockers till every morning or whatever, right? So this is a very conscious thing. Okay, no, I'm doing my treatment. I'm focused on myself. This is me taking care of me. And it's important that they have to recuperate that sense of importance that they are the center of the world and they have to take care of themselves and not all the time take care of other people. And they like that.
That's a beautiful thought that we many people don't take the time for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure through all of your other practical studies, the meditations and the rituals and other kinds of things have brought you to this place,
mm-hmm.
to understand it. What else do you think that the listeners would like to learn?
Oh, I don't know.
we don't have the usual.
We don't have the feedback, but you know, basically. For the Fibonacci series, if they want to know anything else, everything is in my book, honestly.
Yes, yeah, so
yeah,
where can...
everything is in the book, and the details will be in the next one. More details will be in the next one. But, you know, the basics and everything and how to do it and what to expect, everything is there. And my email is there, and they can email me if they have questions. That's not a problem. Right? The other thing I want people to realize is that despite the power of homeopathy, it's not the only thing, the only instrument that we need to use. For example, about 5 or 6 years ago, I had a bout where my treatment didn't work at all, and I wondered why. So I asked other homeopaths to check my recapitulation and what I was doing, and the remedies were correct, and the indications were correct. And so I said, what am I missing here? And what I was missing is the structural aspect of the patient. I didn't check their spines. So I started checking their spines and realizing that many people were misaligned and had problems there. So I started sending them to a colleague of therapists. And he adjusted them, and then they came back, and then the treatment was working. So I said, well, if that is the case, I'm going to learn how to do that too. So I went and started studying osteopathy. And it's a very, very, very powerful tool, like orthobionomy and visceral manipulation and craniosacral therapy. This helps a lot. Because, again, if you have, an old injury, for example, then you're going to use the arnica and have very high potency, even if you don't use the Fibonacci series or whatever. But if... a joint has been displaced or one of your bones in your head is not moving properly, the remedy is not going to help that. It's a mechanical problem. So you have to arrange that mechanically.
This is
something that should never be forgotten. Because I see lots of people with headaches who have done everything and then they come here and I just hold their head for 5 minutes and it's gone. And I even don't need the homeopathic remedy. So we need to reintroduce a little bit of pragmatism and of knowledge of other techniques in the world of homeopathy, because too many people are centered on saying that is the next plus ultra, it's the only thing we should do, and all the rest is nonsense, and that's it. That's, I'm even not discussing that anymore, but it's because it irritates me so much. Doesn't make any sense.
This is a really excellent point,
mm-hmm.
functional medicine, because it's absolutely true that we should be building relationships as homeopaths with all other kinds of practitioners,
mm-hmm.
who can resolve problems in a simple way. For instance, what you said mechanically, one time there was a woman who was having these headaches. And the, I think she's an acupuncturist, she said, well, she took a little history and said, well, how are you sleeping? And the person's was just bought a new pillow, and it was quite large. And then when she slept, her head was tilted the whole night. And right? And so she just needed to make an adjustment on the person's head and then change the pillow.
Exactly. But it's not only have relations with other people, it has at least a basic knowledge of what they do. Because if you don't know who to send to. But if you learn at least, for example, how to check a spine, you know, okay, there's a problem here, there, and there. You need an osteopath. Oh, there's no problem on the spine, but apparently your occiput is not moving correctly. Go and see a craniofacial therapist. So you need at least a basic thing. It's like the program that they do at Basel University. The first 4 years, you learn a little bit of everything. And then you specialize. You become either a naturopath or a homeopath or an osteopath or a herbalist. But you need to know, to have a good basic knowledge in about everything, and especially the basic sciences, physiology and chemistry and physiopathology, and the art of diagnosis. You know, you need that. You know, a lot of people tell me, well, we don't need that because the dose is sent to the GP. Well, excuse me, the GPs are not doing any diagnosis anymore. I have catastrophic studies here, patients here. That have been to their GPs and the specialists and they haven't done anything. And I have to do a conventional diagnosis before starting to treat them. It's absolutely horrible. You cannot trust those guys anymore.
Yeah, there is quite a controversy, and a lot of times there are polls all over the internet whether integrative medicine or alternative or CAM medicine should be taught in medical school. And you would think that they should have a basic fundamental knowledge of it so they know what it's all about. And obviously there's something going on politically.
Yeah, but it's mostly based on money. If you teach them natural medicine, they're going to try to use it in order to keep their patients. Unfortunately, you don't have that mentality of putting the patient first. It's me first, you know, and we see that in the mentality of many GPs and specialists to say, well, if you do that kind of stupid treatments, don't come and see me anymore. Well, that's totally unethical, and you know, here it's considered as malpractice. In New Zealand, you don't have the right to say that.
What is considered malpractice?
For a practitioner to say, well, if you go to Joe the Quack, I don't want to see you anymore.
They're not allowed to.
They're not allowed to do that.
Uh-huh.
But they have here in New Zealand, that's the blessing of this country. The patient is on the center, and at the end of the day, the patient decides what to do, and everybody says amen.
It's all inclusive. Well, it sounds like quite a blessing for you there.
Well, it's not all included because, of course, my former colleagues are laughing at me and criticizing me until they receive a little report that tells them in very polite terms, man, you missed this and you missed that and you missed that. And then they shut up. But I stay very much polite writing my letters. But they cannot say, well, look, listen, you should not do that treatment. I don't want you to do that treatment. They don't have the right to say that. It's none of their business.
Yeah.
They have to offer their trade, and that's it.
It's almost as if a physician should go through a rite of passage by experiencing all the different methods to see.
Then they would see
what they were missing, and maybe it would open their eyes.
I'm a volunteer to do surgery and my colleagues.
Okay.
I volunteer, but you are absolutely correct, because what I offer to my patients, the diet and the treatment and everything, I have tested everything on myself.
Right.
The first Fibonacci series, I did it on myself. That was not a walk in the park, I can tell you. I had gone through, well, of course, the training, the manual medicine training, we are manipulated everywhere. The diet, I've done my diet, the diet myself, I do respect that. I follow that very strictly. When I tell the patient or patients to exercise, I do that myself. I send them to Tai Chi, Qigong, and Yoga. I practice that myself. You know, I put the little bit of money I have in my big mouth. And that's education by example.
But you're a true scientist.
you
are a true scientist and a true physician to do this. Yes.
I try to. That's the minimum. How can I tell a patient to do this or this or that and tell him what he can expect? I can tell a patient, for example, when I tell them to do, if you're going to do my asthmatic treatment, I can tell them, okay, are you ready for this? Because you're going to be tired and exhausted for a few months, and you're going to go to hell for something. And I know that because I did it to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh boy, once, but not twice. I'm talking because you never need to do that twice. But, you know, I can laugh at it, but it was really not funny.
To do what that was going through?
A deep miasmatic treatment.
Oh.
That's again, a new concept which I have that you will read about in my new book.
Okay.
Quite a few classical homeopaths are not going to be very happy about that.
Well, we're always learning, and we'll keep our mind open to these new things. Somebody has to lead the way. So I'm going to ask you to let folks know where they can reach you on the internet, whether by email, by phone, or by visiting your website.
My website is www.naturamedica, NaturaMedica, .web.com. And my email is jroz, @ihug.co.nz. And otherwise, you just Google, and I Googled myself a few times, and I appear very high when
okay.
I Google my name.
Okay,
but
great.
It has to be written, spelled properly.
Right, that's the trick. Well,
yes,
I will write that out, and so people will be able to find you more easily.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and look at all of your books. Tell us the titles of some of the books that you've written so far, and we're looking forward to new ones.
I've written quite a few things. The first one is called Dynamic Gemotherapy. Gemotherapy is a form of herbal medicine based on tinctures of bugs. It's something I learned when I was still back in Belgium. I'm going to rewrite it with more clinical cases and so on. The next one was the book about organotherapy, drainage, and detoxification. This has been published by Emerus. You can find it everywhere at Minimum or at Homeopathic Education. Then we have The Potency, which is the one about the Fibonacci series. Then I published a book called Homeopathy Through the Chinese Looking Glass that allows you, that teaches you how to use the techniques of Chinese medical diagnostics through the tongue and the pulse in order to find the remedies. That's a very nice trick, and it helps a lot, especially with people who don't want to talk or who cannot talk. So just by looking at their tongue and taking their pulse, you have a very good indication of, it's not the specific remedy, what category of remedy, or what type of thing you have to look at. And then the last one that has been published last year is called DSSI. It's Dynamic Somatostructural Integration. The nickname is the Ikebana of Manual Medicine. This is not a technical book. It's just a book that explains how manual medicine works on a scientific way. And I know about a little bit more than halfway in writing the next one, which will be called the Third Millennium of Homeopathy. in which I'm trying to tackle the issue of constitution, miasm, the physiological work of homeopathy, how it works, basically, and then asking a series of questions to which I have no answers, but some suggestions on how to find those answers. And I have no answers because we need access to physics labs and chemistry labs and crystallography and supercomputers and stuff like that. But the questions are asked, and that will be the basis for other people to do some research.
Okay, I
have, so that's it for the time being.
I have one question after you mentioned all these books. When you care for a patient, do you only do one of the techniques at a time?
No.
Simultaneously?
I can very much examine the patient. The first technique would be nutrition and counseling, and then I do the physical examination. If I find something that has to be adjusted, I do it immediately, or I might stick a needle or whatever. Then based on what I have found also on the physical examination, I complete my file. And then I go do my repertorization, choose the remedy, and sometimes I add a few bottles of herbal remedies or gemotherapeutics or homeobotanical remedies to help from the point of view of the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is considered mixopathy and all that stuff, but yes, if you know exactly how everything works, you can know very clearly what is doing what, with some overlap. I admit there are a few overlaps. But then the argument is that I'm at the service of the patient, and I don't have a university hospital, I cannot do that separate research, what will work. Patient needs to come out from here and know, okay, I'm going to take all that, and within a few weeks I'm going to be better. And if I'm not better, that's because the treatment was wrong. So yes, I mix everything. And I don't care what anybody says, because for me, the most important thing is to treat my patients.
Right. So you're saying within a month's time, there's going to be a tremendous amount of improvement.
Oh, there must be. If not, I've made a mistake somewhere.
Okay. Well, people would be thrilled to have a response in that amount of time.
But there's no other choice. You know, that technique has taken 3 months. No, I'm sorry. It's not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
I put myself in their shoes. If I have a problem, I want the solution yesterday.
Oh, okay.
well, that's me. Because I'm a hypochondriac, like every good Jewish boy. I need a solution immediately. The patient is here in front of me. I'll tell the situation. I'm going to tell, look, you've been suffering from that for 50 years. Give me a few years to solve the problem. But at least we need to see motion. We need to see movement, improvement, changes, and things like that. If nothing changes, the treatment is incorrect. It's that simple. Something that the practitioner has to accept. If nothing is changing in the patient, unless the patient is sabotaging in totally, which is kind of very rare, then you've made a mistake. So review what you've done.
And do you take long-distance patients?
I do some email consultations, but there are lots of limitations in that, first of all, because I don't have the speech with them. And I use, in my diagnostics, I use lots of body language. I do face reading. I provoke people with some sentence, some words. When I pick up something, so I try to induce a reaction. And after I take the pulses, I look at the tongue, I do a physical examination. So that is a limitation. If the patient is ready to accept that, there are those limitations, yes, I will do an email consultation.
Okay.
But it's less good.
Right. You may not see the rapidity of response, or if you don't have the complete picture of everything. So
I think people who have responded to the first remedy are prescribed by email, and that is good. other people, well, there was sluggish response and incomplete, and then we discussed that on email, and then they send me an email with a lot of things in it, and suddenly I discover a sentence there, and I say, oh, what did you mean by that sentence? And that sentence is the key to the whole thing, which in a face-to-face consultation would have emerged immediately. But because I didn't see how they reacted, or, you know, just a little flinch when I ask a question, that tells me, okay, no, here there is something. So I go and I dig and I dig and I dig until I reach petrol.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get it. And, you know, I warn my patient, I've been trained by the KGB, so you're going to talk. if I have to torture you, I will, but you're going to talk. And they talk. They know. There are a lot of people who have told me this is the first time in my life I said that to somebody. Well, cool, okay, that's fine. It's a pleasure to hear that. But that is where we have to go. That's the secret.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes very well hidden, and that's why you need to know all those techniques that I'm using, because they might give you the key. For example, if we look at the Chinese pulses, for example, there's a pulse for each organ. In Chinese medicine, the liver is the organ that takes care of anger and resentment. So very often when I have a patient who is not taking any medication or any drugs, and he does not have a proper liver pulse, I'm asking him, do you have any anger or resentment? And bang, the pulse comes back, and I said, oh, yes, we'll talk about that. And the patient said, how do you know that? You just told me. No, please, tell me about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start talking, and then I can finish my case. But without that instrument, I will never know. And I will fiddle around and mess up the case.
It's been wonderful to hear you talk about all of this, and it sounds like everyone needs a whole lifetime to learn all of these.
Well, no, I'm not that old.
No, I mean, well, maybe I'm getting old, but yeah, it seems like.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, well.
There was one case about 8 years ago of an old lady that was messed up completely by two GPs and two specialists. My messed up, they did not manage to diagnose her at all. And because my path was a vascular surgeon, it took me about 20 seconds to have the diagnosis. So I sent her back with a letter, but when the patient left, I took the phone, I called the GP, and I just abused him on the phone. Because that was absolutely horrible. Since then, every time I send him a letter for a patient, and I tell him to jump, he asks why.
Mm-hmm.
And many others do that because they're totally scared. Because if they miss it, I know this, it's terrible for them. So they know that I'm not going to say anything, I'm even going to protect them as long as they do what I say. What I say. So I have them by the cojones, which is good.
They have to be careful because either they're going to get it through your wit or your whip. I don't know which one.
Oh, I'm going to squeeze. Don't worry, I'm very strong. I can squeeze.
Uh-huh. Okay, so the reason I'm asking is because not only for myself, but for other people whose doctor asks them to get this colonoscopy on a regular basis for one reason or another, for instance, hereditarily, the parents had issues, whether... I don't know what it's called, diverticulitis or something, or colon cancer.
Or whatever,
So it is recommended. Okay, that is good to
Look,
know.
Look, it's not a very, it's not a nice examination, but it doesn't imply radiation. It's not a very dangerous examination when it's done by somebody who is well trained, you know, and it can be a lifesaver in many circumstances. I like this. I like examinations because it allows me to peek into the patients. Basically, that's my basic training too. So I like to see that. I like to see X-rays and MRIs and CT scans. I always ask the patient to bring the pictures because I want to look at them myself. And I think it's important in the training of the homeopath that they know how to interpret lab tests, how to interpret X-rays, and to know when to ask for it. It's important. We are, after all, whether you like it or not, we are medical practitioners, all of us. And therefore, we should know medicine. And medicine starts with the knowledge of anatomy, physiology, pathology, and diagnosis. And then, when we know that, comes the level of therapy. And we can choose different therapies. That's something, there's another problem. But first of all, we should know what is wrong with the patient. We go deeper because not only do we know what is wrong with the patient, but we tend to know why it is wrong and treat the why and not only the what. But at least we should know what is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having treatments for diarrhea is very nice, but a diarrhea that is gluten intolerant or ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease or whatever else is treated totally differently. And we should know that.
Mm-hmm. So what is your opinion, because you find them useful, these diagnostic
mm-hmm.
exams, I'm always very concerned about X-rays. I feel that we ask too many of them, and I prefer not to. For instance, checking for breast cancer, always.
That is different. Again, you have to know what you're doing. We do know from the conventional research that breast cancer, that the mammograms, for example, is exactly the same as tossing a coin. So I tell them when patient asks, I say, no, go and do a thermography. It's a lot more precise. The mammogram is totally ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense.
Okay, so you're for the thermograph, which is really good. Okay. Because here in America, that procedure is not covered by medical insurance. It's not really recognized.
Well, there is a board of thermography, I think.
I do thermographs, but it's
mm-hmm.
not officially recognized as.
Do you know that the guy Humphrey, who does most of the thermography here, is recognized by the U.S. Board of Thermographers, which is part of the Board of Radiology, and he went to do the examinations there, the exams and everything. He offered to train me, which I would love to, but then I need $50,000 to buy the machine, and I don't have that. I would love to have a machine.
A lot of people, what they do is they send the patient to the person who has the machine, and then they read the scans, the digital output.
Yeah, but you have to learn how to read it.
Yeah.
It's not that easy. It's not that easy. You need the training.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Humphrey told me that the training would not take very long, but you need to go through quite a few cases. He pulls out all the charts, and we go through that, and to learn how to do it properly, and that's about it. But it has to be done properly. Reading a thermography is like reading an ultrasound. If you don't have the training, you don't know what to read there.
Right.
So,
okay.
Well, of course, all those tests, I say I like them, yes, but you have to know when to use what. Of course, I don't want to irradiate my patients for nothing, or to irradiate myself for nothing. But when I have a doubt, and this is the only way to know for sure what is happening, well, I don't hesitate. The question of value for cost. I had this example with my son last year, I had some very weird pain in my upper femur. I didn't understand where it came from. So, of course, again, good hypochondrial, I must have an osteosarcoma. So, I went and did an X-ray.
Our show is almost ending. We have just a minute or so left. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in today to the show with Joe. He is so exquisitely experienced and gained so much knowledge throughout all of the healing systems. We thank him for taking the time to be with us. And we're going to say goodbye to him in a moment.
Did your pain go away after the x-ray?
Did I what?
Did the pain go away?
Not directly after the x-ray, because then, knowing that I didn't have a cancer, I started examining myself properly, which, believe me, is not easy. And I found out finally that that pain was caused by a trigger point in my gluteus minimum. So I had to manipulate myself, my gluteus. Now you can imagine what type of acrobacy this is. And then it went away.
Well, I'm glad it went away. And now... Okay, so it was a real pleasure to speak with you. And we'll see how this goes. It might take me a little time to finish preparing the audio and getting it up there. But I'll let you know, and we'll see how it goes, and we could do this again.
Oh, yeah, with pleasure.
Okay.
With pleasure. Anytime.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that was a call directly to me, the host, Debbie Brook of Homeopathy World Community and Blog Talk Radio. We thank you so much. Hope you're... special day and celebrations go well. We will be up on Thursday with Alan Phillips at noon talking about vaccinations, your rights, exemptions, and waivers. Get the knowledge so that you can make informed decisions. On next Monday on the Health In Show, go to Homeopathy World Community. I will be putting a banner up, and it is in the Health In group. We're going to be having Todd Rowe, MD, talking about how we can improve our chances for change when we want to improve our lives and move forward. What is holding us back? And he's going to be talking with us. We're going to end today's show, and thanks for sharing by tweeting, putting it on Facebook, taking the embed code and putting it on your own website. And we look forward to Dr. Adil Kasim back on next Wednesday. Send in your questions and your comments. We will answer them on the air.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brook and special guests. We encourage you to follow our show, favorite the show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air, share with your friends on Facebook and Twitter, send in your comments and questions. See you the next time.
Yo!